Explain gardening for the Gulf Coast with Mobile's award-winning garden expert and chief horticultural advisor for Mobile Botanical Gardens, Bill Finch. We'll talk about living and growing on the Gulf Coast. Now, your personal yard and garden consultant, here's Bill Finch.
Yo, it's a Gulf Coast Sunday morning, is it not? You know, we're going to get a little bit of rain, and then it's going to be kind of just 92 and 74. You can just repeat it over and over again. It's going to be the temperature range. It's typical of this time of year. It's a little hot, but not that hot. Not as hot as it is in a lot of places. The Gulf keeps the temperatures down. It's the time of year, if you're just getting a little bored with that 92, 74. Let me get your mind on a couple of other things. We're going to talk about it today. August is the time for planting, and we're going to have to get around to that. We're going to have to start thinking about that. We have to figure out what to plant for fall, because there's a lot of great things. In fact, we're going to talk about there are things to plant right now. Right now. Marigolds, petunias, sweet williams, all of those great plants that can be just beautiful in fall and winter and spring, but you got to plant them now. And you need to order seeds too, because we're going to have to be planting kale and collards and broccoli. If you're a little farther north, you may need to be planting those maybe already. Some of us can wait. Some can wait till about the middle of August. But you need to have those seeds ready to go, because this is the great planting time. We're coming up on the great planting time, hurricane summer along the Gulf Coast. We got to start sowing seeds now, so we'll be ready. Think about the cool weather, and you can think about the cool weather while you're planting the seeds. You know, we are so divorced from being outside. And the other thing I want to talk about today, because I've been thinking about it a lot, one of the reasons right now that we have that Mississippi and Alabama and Florida and Texas and a lot of other states, in Arizona in the Southern Belt, one of the reasons they are having such a problem right now with this grip, La Grippe, the disease, COVID, one of the reasons they're having such a problem, and there's increasing evidence, why is it a problem in these southern states? Why will it become a problem in the Midwest? Because everybody's living inside, in air conditioning. One of the reasons flu season used to be so bad in winter was because everybody was living inside all the time, rebreathing each other's air, recirculating that air all the time. And this is what's happening now to all of us, because we've forgotten how to live outside. And so I've just had some thoughts. It occurred to me, this is a Sunday, and I am thinking about churches and how churches meet and how we're taking offense that we may or may not be able to assemble in churches. But here's the interesting thing. In the old days, it probably wasn't such an issue because the windows were open. There was a little more room. But here's an even older day. Do you remember the brush arbor? If we wanted to have church services where we didn't have such a problem with COVID, maybe we should return to that old tradition of brush arbors. It's amazing how many people don't remember them. The tent revival was a sort of an updated version of the brush arbor. But the brush arbor was a place, a camp meeting, where you had camp meetings. And you put the poles in the ground, and you created a little roof, sort of like a tabernacle of leaves out of the middle of the woods. You remember that? You remember people doing that? Some of you will. And under that brush arbor, the interesting thing is the infection from COVID would be much less because the ventilation is so good. Now, there's still some things you'd probably want to do if you were smart about it. You'd probably want to keep the preacher a little bit distance so that when he started shouting and snorting, he didn't spit on you. just back him off a little bit on the podium there. But the fact of the matter is, it's good to be outside. It's safe to be outside. It's healthy to be outside under any circumstance. And in the South, we've forgotten how to be outside. And you'd say, oh, it's too hot right now. Well, it really isn't. It really isn't. People used to be outside all the time. They might prefer some shade. They might like to be in a place where there's a breeze. But they were used to being outside. Even when they were inside, they were outside. Because they had their windows open. And the air was coming in all the time, and it was cleansing the air inside the house. We weren't continually rebreathing. It's interesting. That's where the science is going with things like COVID. We know that we can get infected in lots of ways, but one of the big issues is not cleaning down surfaces, not all that. It's what's happening to the air around you. And particularly in closed spaces where that air keeps getting recirculated, that's where we keep getting the big rates of infection. So what's the antidote? Folks, let's spend some time outside. Let's spend some time outside in the garden. Let's build brush arbors again. Let's have concerts outside. Let's think about how we used to live. Let's open a window, for heaven's sakes, Pete's sakes. Maybe a little human now. I agree. It would take a whole big adjustment for you to open your windows now. But when September gets here and we get those cool nights, open your windows. It's a way of cleaning the house. It's a way of dealing with those issues. Hey, we're going to talk a little bit more about being outside. We're going to talk about COVID. We're going to talk about brush arbors. But you give us a call this morning. We'll talk about what it is that you want to talk about. Let me get you started just for a second. Just for a second. On thinking about what it is you need to be doing right now. Let's return to this theme. It's the planting season. It's the time to be outside. It's the time to start exploring outside. What you need to do is get some pots arranged. Arrange some pots in a place where they can get a little bit of sunlight, maybe on a porch. A good bit of breezes, not too much rain. You can even start the seeds inside if you like, but you need to get your seeds ready to go because you need broccoli. You need broccoli ready to go in the ground at the end of September. It needs to be plenty big if you're on the Gulf Coast. If you're farther north, you need that broccoli to go in the ground as soon as the night temperatures get into the mid-60s, which could be mid-September. And that means you've got to start those plants now. You got to start them now. Cabbage, you need to start them now if you're going to start them. Cauliflower, you sure got to start it right away. Your kale, you're going to have to start your kale about the 1st of September if you want it to be productive. You're going to have to start thinking about collards for sure by the 20th of August. Those things, if you're on the Gulf Coast, you're going to start them sooner if you're farther inland. Those are the kinds of things we need to do during this hot weather. I'm giving you a little notice, giving you a little time to think about it so you can do it. It's also good to think about if you're going to plant garlic, you have to order it now. If you're going to plant bulbs, flowering bulbs for spring, you've got to order it now because they will need to be planted in October, November, and lots of other people are already out there ordering. I can tell you the supplies of garlic this year are already getting low. It's time to go find a good supplier of garlic. You can call me. We'll talk about it. And get some garlic that's going to work for you if that's what you want. If you want perennial onions. If you're a little in from the Gulf Coast, now's the time you have to order. We have to get ready. It's hot weather. You're getting bored with that 92-74 forecast. But here's the way to get over that boredom. Think about what it's going to be like when those nights start getting cool. When we start getting night temperatures in the 60s again, and get ready for it. Get ready for the planting, because you have a whole nother season of gardening in front of you. Lots of great flowers too. Already mentioned them. This is the time to start marigolds. Marigolds love what's coming up. It's not too late to start zinnias on the Gulf Coast. Zinnias will love the weather coming up. It's not too late to start petunias. Petunias are one of the great plants for this time of year. Nasturtiums. Ooh, goodness gracious, I almost forgot. Nasturtium, sweet williams. There you go. And there's a backwards old town that's
often remembered so many times that my Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
Hey, welcome back. It is a Gulf Coast Sunday morning with Plain Gardening. Alicia, Alicia has reminded me that I was going to tell her about pepper varieties, and so here's how I'm going to start. Alicia writes me and says, a reminder to talk about when what peppers grow best here and when to plant. Thank you so much. I only had a 50-50 success this year. The rain killed me. She's talked about how hard it is. She's had a problem with jalapenos. And, yeah, they don't do that well. It's very interesting. A lot of the peppers that we grow are peppers from the mountains of Mexico or from the dry parts of Mexico, and they do not do well in our conditions. Poblanos don't do well in on the Gulf Coast. They don't do that well anywhere in Alabama, but they do particularly poorly along the Gulf Coast. Jalapenos do okay, better than some. Bell peppers actually are really hard along the Gulf Coast, and I keep reminding people of that. You know, we decide that the garden has to resemble the grocery store shelf. It shouldn't. I mean, if anything you're growing resembles something you're growing on the grocery store shelf, you've done it wrong. Because what they got on the grocery store shelf is the wrong thing, because that's about shipping in a truck from California. It ain't about what's the best vegetable. It isn't about the best varieties. It's about what ships well in a truck from California or on a boat from Argentina. That's what your grocery store shelves are about. So what peppers do well? Can I just talk about that real quickly? And Alicia, I'm going to start you on a word. This is the word that we need to learn here on the Gulf Coast. The word is AJI. AJI. Ahi is the best that you'll just have to, that's the best I can pronounce it. Ahi. And AJI. When you see the word ahi associated with a pepper, it usually means it's from the Caribbean or from South America. So there's some great ones out there. Ahi dulce, or dulce, or however you want to pronounce it. Dulce is the Portuguese-Spanish word for sweet. Ahi dulce. Ahi limon. Ahi crystal. Beautiful pepper. Great, would be great for jellies. You can use it green. Ahi omnicolor. Ahi omnicolor. I'm going to say it that way. Omni meaning all colors. It's this beautiful pepper. It would make great pepper jelly. It would be great. Ahi Colorado. I think it would be a great pepper. Ahi Santa Cruz. Ahi, you get the picture? These are Caribbean and South American peppers. You're growing the ghost pepper, which is a type of Chinese pepper that we kind of associate with habaneros. But some of those habaneros are not nearly so hot. They're quite good. Ahi dulce, ahi mango. But start with the ahi. There are a lot of great ahi peppers. And Alicia, if you just start exploring those ahi peppers, if you have any questions about which ones you want to try for the pepper jelly, you write me back, you call me, let's talk about it. But this is the direction we need to go with peppers. They are so productive. In many cases, those peppers last for years in the ground on the Gulf Coast. Amazing. I've had peppers that lasted 3, 4, 5 years. in the ground. And that's something else we can talk about. And that way you really get a lot of peppers. Ahi, a good word to learn. Alicia, does that help? Let's talk more about it. Let's talk more about what you need in terms of peppers and sizes and cell walls and everything else. And we'll talk about it. You give me a call, too. We'll talk more about that. It sounds fun. Lots of callers, it looks like. Gosh, who is our first caller? Is it David? David, I'm listening. David, you tried last week, and we didn't get to it. I'm sorry.
That's all right. Actually, I called the week before that as well at the very end of the show, and my question to you at that time was I was looking for something to plant along my driveway in an area that receives sun from about this time of the day to about 2 o'clock, and that would create a border, and you mentioned clumping bamboo.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
To call you back to get more information.
Good. So here's the deal. There's a lot of great clumping bamboos that'll work. And it depends on how tall you want them to be, ultimately. That's the big
about
question.
6 feet.
6 feet.
Yeah.
Wow.
I'm
that's pretty short.
As a screen on something that I don't want to see in my neighbor's yard.
So let's go with one. We'll go with a Bambusa. That's a Bambusa multiplex. What's the name of it? I'll think of the name of it in just a minute. Bambusa multiplex, and there are a number of in the group Bambusa, Bambusa multiplex, kind of like Cineplex, but multiplex, multiplex. In that group, there are some very short ones. And I want to say that one of them is called something goddess, but it's they will get about 6 to 8 feet tall. They'll be perfect for you. That's with all the foliage. They would make a perfect screen there. And they would that would be a very easy space. They would do very well. And they have very pretty colors. Now, where are you going to find these? The Mobile Botanical Gardens, if they have a plant sale this year, I think they are. Not sure, but I think they are. Don't know how they're going to have it. Sometimes they get in bamboo. Sometimes they don't. But look for a place called Bamboo Plantation. Bamboo Plantation in Mississippi. And look through their varieties. They have a lot of great varieties. Look for the varieties under Bambusa multiplex. And look for the short ones. And they'll have several that'll work. If it says 8 or 10 feet, you'll be fine. That'll be just fine. And anything 8 to 10 feet or shorter sounds perfect for your space.
All right, one question. And what you're recommending here, these are still the clumping bamboo variety.
They're all clumpers. And let me...
Not going to spread across.
Not going to spread across. And they're going to make a tight clump. They'll spread just a little. In fact, the smaller ones are going to spread very tightly year to year. Every now and then you might want to thin them out, clean them out in the middle, keeps them a little neater looking. And you call me back and we can talk about how to do that. But other than that, they don't take a lot of maintenance at all, and they are very easy to manage.
All right. And one other question that is along the same line, because I have about a 20-foot area, and then I have a group of oak trees that's going to give me shade that I'm assuming that these same plants would not do well underneath the shade of these oak trees.
Yeah, so they will do the transition. They'll do the transition fairly well. They will take some shade. In fact, but, you know, if you've got an oak tree that's casting lots of shade, very dense shade, it's going to be very hard to grow them in those situations. In that situation, I would transition to something like, you know, you can't plant it right up against the trunk of the oak, but you can transition.
No, I won't be, no.
Yeah, they'll do the transition to the outer edges of the oak. As long as they're getting some sunlight during the day, they'll do well. As you get closer to the trunk, you can mix in a little bit of Agarista, Agarista, You got that? A-G-A-R-I-S-T-A, Agarista. And it's a Florida leucothea is what it's sometimes called. Doesn't help you anymore. Agarista papulifolia. Sorry about all those weird names.
Yeah.
But Agarista will have the appearance of bamboo, sort of, but it has beautiful flowers, and it will fit into that space real well and tolerate shade much better than the bamboo does.
Okay. And somebody had mentioned for that shade area that I was talking to about, I'm not sure if I'm going to pronounce this, Fatsia japonica, F-A-T-S-I-A.
Fatsia, yeah. You know, yeah. It all depends on, Fatsia is kind of the fun way to say it, isn't it? But it doesn't look Fatsia, it looks beautiful. It's a great plant. It'll do real well in those shady areas.
Okay.
So I love Fatsia, and it's if it grows well, it can make a pretty good screen. Wouldn't do as well in full sun, I don't think, but it would with moderate shade, as long as the shade's not too dense, Fatsia would do really well in those areas.
Okay. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Call me back if you got any more questions, okay?
All right, will do. Thank you.
Thanks, David. Gosh, have we got time for one more caller before this break? Ian? Oh, there it is. Boom. So, but we're going to be back. So hold on, folks. We're going to get to your calls.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
Hey, welcome back. It is a Gulf Coast Sunday morning with Plain Gardening. Lots of things to talk about this morning. Does anybody remember brush arbors? they're so cool. It's part of our tradition here in the South, and they're really neat. You know, you still see little traces of the brush arbor tradition showing up. Sometimes you'll hear about tent revivals, but people are so used to air conditioning, even tent revivals have declined from what they used to be. And it's so weird how we're so cut off from our environment, even in our churches, the way we worship now. It is so cut off from the environment. And it didn't used to be that way. Brush arbors are really cool. There's a great little piece of history on 98 going out through Sims. And it's fun to see. It's right by my friend Martin Vandergeesen's wholesale nursery. He's got a little place. But if you're going out from Sims, you go through town, downtown Sims, which has gotten, unfortunately, more downtown-y as time has gone on. You go over the bridge. You go past some of the nurseries, some of the old Blackwell nurseries, which now, I guess, are becoming housing subdivisions. But you go out and you'll look on your left, and there's this cool little place where there's a bunch of church benches under a little open-air roof. It's open-air, but there's a roof over it. And a little place, and it's like a place where they had sing-ins. You remember what a sing-in is? And they had, you know, they had revivals and other things there. It's really cool. It's sitting there. It hadn't been used. I haven't seen anybody use it in years. But that's part of that brush arbor tradition. And it is about being outside. It's about being part of the atmosphere of where you are. And we've lost that in the South, haven't we? And it's costing us. I think even with COVID, I think it's costing us. Sorry to mention that, but it's worth mentioning. Hey, a lot of callers this morning. I'm listening. Who was our next caller, Ian? Good. I'm listening. What's up? One shot?
Hello.
Hey, can you hear me?
Yes, sir. I got you now.
Good.
I have some muscadine vines, and I have them on the up on the arbors that are about 6 feet tall so I can walk under them. And
yeah.
They have suddenly put down a bunch of, looks like strings. I'm assuming that they're trying to send roots all the way from 6 feet up there to the ground. Wouldn't have any problem if I cut those off.
No, it shouldn't be at all. Those are aerial rootlets. In a humid condition, they'll really begin forming pretty dramatically, but it won't hurt to take those off at all.
Okay, now, second question. It's putting out some really long runners, like 6 feet, just like a wild hare out there. Is any problem with cutting those off at this time of year?
Let me think about that for a second. Usually you end up, no, I don't think it shouldn't matter. It shouldn't matter at all. You've got an arbor, right? Is that, you said it was an arbor.
Yes. And trellis, you know, it's 6 feet tall and horizontal, you know, and they run, so I can walk up under there and pick my muscadines.
Yeah, so it's going to be really hard to prune them anyway. So you're not going to prune them in any kind of traditional way. No, it probably doesn't hurt. Over time, with an arbor, with grapes on an arbor, they become less productive over time because it's very hard to prune them to discourage that kind of rank growth. But for the next few years, you're going to get a lot of grapes. But you can prune that off. It shouldn't make any difference.
Yes. Now, I prune them back significantly in the spring, like just before they bud out and everything. I really chop them back.
Yeah, and, you know, it's the one thing to remember is it's last year's spurs that produce the fruits.
Yes.
You got that down? Okay, good. You got that?
Yes, sir.
You're okay then. Good. No, it won't hurt. It won't hurt. Just remember, you're trying to keep those spurs, and you're trying to keep some distance between the spurs. About a hand's distance between the spurs. So, and then you gotta, you know, then you got those spurs keep getting more complicated. But yeah, as long as you're keeping in mind how you're going to prune in spring, it won't hurt to take out some of those big lanky pieces.
All right, great. Thank you.
All right. Good to hear from you. Who's next, Ian? Gene, what's going on with the fertilizer?
Everything good. Good. How about yourself?
Good, good.
I got a couple questions. One of them's about Miracle-Gro. I found a box of it. I don't know how long it's been here. Does that stuff go bad?
As long as it's in a plastic bag, and it usually is. Is it in a plastic bag?
Yeah.
Yeah, it should be fine.
Another question.
Yeah.
I got some things on little potato vines. I know you know what those are. You know, talking about has the potatoes on them?
Yeah, yeah.
Anyway, there's some bugs on that thing. It looks like a ladybug, but they're much bigger. And they eating them up. They eat them up last year. I don't care because they think they die anyway. But I'm just curious what it might be. It looks just like a lot of ladybugs if it's bigger.
Well, I'll be dead gum.
That's
good to hear. This was there was an attempt. So the air potato was getting to be a bit of a problem in the wild, and so it was an invasive species. It was causing a lot of problems. So a few years ago, there was an attempt to introduce some insects to eat these guys, and apparently it's bearing fruit, as it were.
That's about time for them to come down, and I ought to keep them on my front porch. I keep them under control.
Yeah.
So the third thing I'll tell you about, you're talking about bell peppers, that kind of stuff. I grow peppers in the spring. You start planting this time of year. And I got one like you're talking about. It's in a pot, and it's been there 3 years, and it's produced every year. And in the fall of the year, they always do real well.
That's right. And just like tomatoes, they don't like the humidity of midsummer. So you got it right. You know, but I'm also talking about another group of peppers that you can grow all year long and really do tolerate the humidity well, and then come on in fall as well. But yeah, you're right. If you're going to grow bell peppers, probably the best time to do it is in the fall.
Yeah, I got one about 2 foot high, speaks up blooming. One other thing on the pimento peppers, I can't seem to find any anywhere. Do you know where you might be able to buy them? I like to do the pimento pepper stuff, but I can't find any.
Pimento
here.
Peppers?
Ones. You can buy one that says pimento pepper, but it looks just like a bell pepper. You know what I'm talking about?
Well, yeah, I guess. Pimento peppers are, there are a lot of European peppers that are described as pimento peppers.
Yeah.
They don't, and they're from, there are lots of catalogs you can go to and order them, order the seeds for those. I'll tell you, I've tried some of those from Hungary and other places where they grow true pimentos. They are they do terribly here.
Really?
But yeah, you can try them. I would try another substitute. You know, if you're trying to make pimento cheese or something like that,
that's correct.
There's a lot of ways to do that with just regular peppers. I'd get a good pepper that's not necessarily called a pimento. I'd have to think about which one. But, you know, I think your bell peppers would do just as well in pimento cheese as any of the
pimento
true
pepper. But it don't look like the original ones I used for years past. They were kind of pear-shaped, had a little point on the end of it. And I don't notice any difference in the taste there because that's been a while back. But I can't seem to find any like it. I'll just stick with this one here and see how it works.
All right. Good, man.
Appreciate it.
All right, thank you. So let's go to our next caller. Tomato problems. Ron, is that you? Rob, sorry.
Yes, sir. Yeah, I grow tomatoes and do a good job at it, but all of a sudden, last week, well, maybe 2 weeks now, you cut them, and inside, the outside's red, the inside's juicy red, but the I don't know what you call them, the little core are just solid yellow and hard. And that's never happened to me before, and I've grown a lot of tomatoes. Now, we have moved to West Mobile from Saraland. That might be it.
So, yeah, heat does terrible things to tomatoes, and particularly the bigger tomatoes. So I think you're having some problems with that, and a lot of times the inside will coarsen up. The fact that you're getting tomatoes at all this time of year is incredible. It's remarkable. The high night temperatures would be the thing that would cause that. It causes the inside of the I don't know what you call it, but the inside will get coarse and kind of white or yellowish and not very good to eat. Yeah, that happens a lot during these hot nights, particularly with the larger tomatoes. It's why I say, you know, harvest your tomatoes before the hot weather of July, or time your harvest so that you're picking them in late September, October, November, when the heat declines.
Yeah, when we just moved and planted a peach and two apple trees, and if you Google it, you get 13 different answers how to water a new fruit tree. One says soak it two or three times a day. Some say every 2 weeks. What's your idea?
The apples are going to do poorly along the Gulf Coast, and peaches are going to be really difficult. But if you can keep them alive, the good thing is that during July, as you're getting water every day, a tree that's newly planted doesn't have a long, big root system. So you don't have to add much water, but it has to be right near the roots. So if you added about, 3 to 6 gallons every week, and every bit of it got to the roots, that would be enough. But it probably is good to add about 3 to 6 gallons a week. Make sure it gets right to the roots, though, and doesn't spread all over creation, because it's only got roots right there.
All right. Thanks for what you do. I appreciate it.
Yes, sir. That reminds me, David Hubble sent me some great pictures of his garden, which I'm going to try to get back to, listening to this Gagutsa tune. We'll be back. Gagutsa Bella, she's my
pizza pie with lots of mozzarella. Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
Yay! Welcome back. It's Gulf Coast Sunday morning with Plain Gardening. I'm going to do this pepper thing. We're going to go to pepper growing stage three. Stage 0.5 is when you're trying to grow bell peppers and failing. Stage one is when you learn that there are other peppers in the world besides bell peppers that will probably do better. But stage two was when we really made a big difference. We talked about ahis, A-J-I. And when you see the word ahi, it's usually a good indication that it's a South American, Central American pepper that's going to do much better with our warm nights. I'm going to go to stage three real quickly. That'll help explain some things. There are three, we're going to talk about four species of peppers. Can I talk about things like species? It's important. The main pepper species that people grow in the United States, simply because it does well for Boston, is Annuum, A-N-N-U-M. Maybe it's got two U's. I think it does. At any rate, my head speller isn't working. But Annuum, it means annual pepper. They actually will be perennial if you can allow them, but they won't be generally. Most Annuum peppers, not all, but most Annuum peppers are from drier climates like the mountains of Mexico. They have a real problem with high night temperatures and humidity. They don't do well for us. Not a lot of bug resistance either. Bell peppers are a classic annuum. Jalapeno, whatever you want to say, is an annuum pepper. Most pimentos that they grow in Europe are all annuum peppers. Italian peppers are annuum peppers. But let me tell you, there are other species of peppers, and one of the easiest peppers to talk about is the Chinense peppers. It's almost spelled like China. It's a bad species name because it seems to suggest something about China. They're not from China. They are peppers from the tropical parts of Central America and the Caribbean, mostly. Chinense peppers. Habanero is a Chinense pepper, but there are lots of different kinds. Reapers and all of those really super hot peppers, scorpions, they're all Chinense peppers, but there are a lot of Chinense peppers that are not that extremely hot. They actually have flavor that you can taste, and they're not extremely hot. The Chinense peppers are a great group. Aji Dulce is a type of Chinense pepper. It's very sweet, very, very delicious. Aji Mango, if I remember correctly, is a Chinense pepper. Those habanero peppers, Chinense pepper group, can be very good. They have a great fruity flavor. They're delicious. There's another species group. Stay with me. It's called Bacatum. B-A-C-C-A-T-U-M. And Bacatums are mostly South American peppers, but they are delicious. They're incredible. They're not as hot generally as Chinenses, but they can be pretty hot. And they have a lot of deep flavors. And I really love some of the Bacatums. And they're the ones that can last for us year to year to year. Aji Omnicolor is one of those. And there's a lot of others. And I really love that group. So there you go. Dan is testifying. Ajis are the best, especially in this humid climate. Dan had another interesting picture, which I'm going to talk about when I get a chance. But there it is. Think about those when you're planting your garden. It's really important for us. We take hand-me-downs from Boston. We say, oh, we're so proud to be Southerners. And we never go outside to find out what the Southern air is like. We live our lives inside our houses because we don't like the South. We grow plants that Boston grows because we just are happy to take hand-me-downs from Boston. If we were doing it right, we would be growing the peppers that I just talked about. Sorry. Hey, I know we've got another caller. I'm listening. Who's up next? Hey.
Bill.
How are you?
Good. This is Tommy Lee from Fairhope.
Tommy, good to hear from you.
Hey, I had read in Dinwiddie's History of Mobile, and you know what the connection between Mobile and Chicago is?
I don't.
They're both named after green onions.
Well, sort of. Yeah, so there is an onion. There is a wild onion that's called Mobilensis, but it's actually the onion's name for Mobile. Yes. So not the other way around, but yes.
Okay.
But
what I was wondering about was the hickory oil.
Yeah.
And because Dinwiddie mentions that in his treatise on the history of Mobile as being an article of trade.
Right.
And I was just wanting to know, I mean, how many hickory nuts does it take to make an ounce of hickory oil?
Well, not as many as you would think. And it's very, I've done it before, and it's quite good, and we talk about it a lot. It was the great commodity of Alabama, because Alabama is the center of hickory diversity globally. And people here learn to use hickories. Not all hickories made great oil, but the majority of them did. You wanted to know which ones to look for. I wouldn't go in the middle of the swamp and get the bitternut hickory, because it's probably not going to, it's going to make better oil. But if you find the right hickories, you crush the whole husk. You don't try to pick them out like pecans. We got this whole bad idea because we're stuck on the idea of pecans. But you take the whole husk, you crush it up, you boil it, or you could just let it, you know, you could probably let it sit there long enough and some of the oil come out. But boiling it is definitely going to get the oil out. And then you skim it off. And, yeah, I mean, it's probably as good an extraction as you'd get from almost any oil on a per-weight basis. So if you were doing camellia oil, olive oil might be a little more productive on a per-weight basis, but not a lot more. It always takes a lot of olive to make olive oil. It takes a lot of camellia nuts to make camellia oil. And a lot of sunflower seeds to make sunflower oil.
Yeah. Well, I was just curious about that because, you know, what would they use it for? I mean, would you use it for frying stuff in if you didn't have bacon around?
Well, hickory oil made a butter. William Bartram said that he had corn cakes, essentially a kind of a what was essentially a corn meal pancake with
Johnny,
probably wasn't called Johnny cake because the Creeks were making it, the Coasati were making it. But he said the butter that he had on it was a hickory nut butter. He said it was better than any cream he ever had. And so oils are used for lots of things. I mean, they are definitely good for you. They flavor things. They help you to cook things. So just like oils are used today, this oil made a great butter, and hickory nut butter was a famous commodity and probably one of the ways that they moved that oil around. And, boy, it's too bad that we have to take this hard break because it'd be fun to talk about it a lot more. Tommy Lee, I hope that helped. Hey, we're going to be back.
We appreciate you as an asset to the community.
All right. Hey, we're going to be back. Geraldine, hold on. I know you've been trying. And I never would have got through the Arkansas mud if I hadn't been.